Well, good morning, everyone. It's Matt Elliott here with Lloyd Jackson, and we are happy and proud to welcome in Mike Kozak, who's the president and partner of Giffels Webster, a civil engineering firm here in Detroit. Good morning, Mike.
Morning, guys. How are you?
We're good.
We are fantastic. So, Mike, you're the president and a partner of a 74-year-old civil engineering firm. Tell us a little bit about, for those of us who are not engineers, I wasn't smart enough to get an engineering degree. I ended up as a finance major. So tell us a little bit about what civil engineering, what civil engineers do, and maybe some of the impact that you've had across, your firm has had across Metro Detroit.
Sure, yeah. Our, like you said, our core business is civil engineering. We're a collection of civil engineers, but supported strongly by a team of surveyors, landscape architecture, community planners, GIS specialists. And, you know, we are really responsible for the planning, the design, and supervision of construction projects, infrastructure projects. So you're thinking roads, water mains, sewers, all of the things kind of below the surface that you don't see necessarily every single day, and you hope that they're working every single day, but when they don't, we certainly get some attention. So our business is split really between working for private developers, primarily in the city of Detroit with the large redevelopment projects that have happened here recently, private development in the suburbs, so your commercial, residential, and then a large part of it is working for municipalities throughout Southeast Michigan, and that's communities that are both still growing and expanding and building new infrastructure to serve new residents and new businesses and communities that are investing in really the rehabilitation of their communities.
You know, Mike, your firm has been involved in some of Detroit's biggest transformation projects. I'm talking about Little Caesars, Michigan Central, Hudson's Detroit Development. When you look at the skyline today, does it feel a little surreal seeing projects your team has helped shape?
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm actually sitting in our headquarters downtown right now in Grand Circus Park, and I can look out the window and see the Hudson's Tower that rose there recently and all the exciting things that have happened there. We had surveying crews working on that building to make sure that it rose straight and true as it became one of the newest size skyscrapers in Detroit. And we could watch them from our office, literally from our windows. We'd see them out there on very cold mornings and in the wintertime, standing out there, making sure that everything was done right. So yeah, it's been amazing to see just the consistent reinvestment in the city and all of the spoils that have come along with that.
You know, one of the other major structures that will be hopefully opening soon here in Detroit is the Gordie Howe Bridge. Tell us a little bit about the work you did there to make sure that project went off correctly.
Yeah, that one was interesting in that none of our design teams actually worked on that project. That was a survey-led project where we were working. Usually our clients on the design side, like I said, are land developers or municipalities. In this case, it was our survey crews that were working directly for the contractors that were building the plaza on the U.S. side. So we were responsible for providing survey layout for all of the stormwater improvements there. You can think of all the building and pavements that represent that plaza that all has to drain somewhere. And then all the electrical, underground electrical conduits, miles and miles of conduits serving that building and the bridge itself. So that one, we had teams out there for, you know, years in a row that really spent time and we're committed to that project. And yeah, we're also very excited to see it open. I was hopeful. Yeah. We headed to Toronto next week for the World Cup, and I was hopeful that we would be able to drive across that bridge. And I don't know that it's going to happen now, but we'll see.
Well, you know, there's also, Mike, a growing conversation about sustainability and resiliency. How much has climate and environmental planning become part of modern civil engineering?
It's a big part, and really the change that we've seen, particularly on the stormwater management side and the investment that communities are making in helping to, you know, plan for the future and work with the infrastructure that they have in place now. But, you know, as climate change and storms become more intense, we have to plan for that. And it's not an overnight reaction. It really has to happen kind of systematically and slowly so people understand standards changing. But it's a really important thing that everybody needs to be thinking about, because our systems that are in place now that were built 50, 75 years ago are not prepared for what's coming down the road.
You know, you've been working in the city for over 70 years, 74 years to be exact, and you've learned a thing or two about what's underground here around Detroit. And I think that's one of the things that's made your firm as effective as it is. Tell us a little bit about what it's like to dig into the ground here in Metro Detroit, in particular in the city, and what are the kinds of things that you have to plan for?
It's complicated, as you would expect. The spider web or spaghetti noodles that are underneath most of these streets really present a challenge. So it's about putting together a team, a development team that understands that. That includes design professionals, and when it comes to the construction, it includes the right contractors that are prepared for that work and understand the pitfalls that can come. And it's about being, you know, kind of resilient during the project and being able to adjust things as you find underground assets that maybe weren't where they're supposed to be or aren't in the same size or condition that they were supposed to be, but, you know, really adjusting your design to accommodate that and keep the project moving forward as efficiently as possible.
Mike, we got about a minute left. You know, a lot of students don't even know what civil engineering or surveying really is. How do we better expose young people to these careers?
Yeah, that's been a challenge for us. We're really trying to reinvest in an internship program with college students, but they've already made the decision to do that. So we reach out at the high school level. We attend middle school and high school career fairs. Our ownership team goes to their kids' schools and speaks on career days and really tries to impress upon people how important it is that we manage these assets and that we get people, good people, to come into this industry that are passionate about it.
You know, Mike, I'm really glad to hear that you do that. As a former banker, my best clients did that exact thing. They went into the schools to demonstrate what their work is. You know, you can't be what you can't see.
That's right.
And so by doing that work, it makes a huge difference. So thank you, number one, for the work you do, and also thank you for getting into our schools and showing the art of the possible to students. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate the time.
Who's coming up at 7:49?
7:49, we have Hillary Doe, who is the head of Move Detroit for the city of Detroit. She's part of Mayor Sheffield's, you know, population growth initiative head, and she'll be a great guest. We'll have a lot of fun talking to Hillary.
But first, it's Automotive Views with Mike Martinez, brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Learn more at michiganbusiness.org.
Ford left a lot of crossover customers without a home when it discontinued the Edge in 2024 and the Escape last year, but its dealers have found success keeping them in the fold with a surprising but familiar name, the Ford Explorer. Sales of the Explorer are up 18% through May. Meanwhile, Ford's two closest alternatives to the Escape in size and price have seen declines, with the Bronco Sport slipping 1.5% and the Maverick down 12%. Just how has Ford convinced buyers of smaller, more affordable vehicles to shell out more money? Dealers say the company offered Escape and Edge buyers up to $10,000 in private offers to stay in the Ford family. Coincidentally, the cheapest Explorer is about $10,000 more than the cheapest Escape. It's also a known entity. Explorer has well over 30 years of brand cachet as one of the pioneering vehicles of the 1990s SUV boom. It's proven quite versatile over the years and is doing so again today. For this week's Automotive View, I'm Mike Martinez with Automotive News.